Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Dealers of Ireland. Our showrooms are open for business with your health and safety our priority. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551, wash your hands, that's our text number now. As you know, the pubs are in serious difficulties. John Harney in County Tip. Let me cough first. I can't, there's no cough button in the studio, unfortunately. But John Harney, tell us, you are opening your pub early. Why?
I've decided to open on the 29th, the same as the bar restaurants. And a couple of things happened which prompted it. I was at home yesterday evening and I was watching the news, and Liz Canavan came on, and she made no reference to the march in Dublin yesterday. And she spoke and said about the compliance and that the guards were happy with the compliance and the social distancing, and never mentioned it. So my first thought was, is it a rewind or has somebody the wrong news on? And then I waited and Tony Hoolan came on. And he was asked a very straight question. Would he recommend that the people, the thousands of people who were in the march yesterday, should self-isolate for 14 days?
Okay.
And he replied, the overall level of the disease is easing. Restrictions seem appropriate. Symptoms are very important. And if you are at events over the weekend and have symptoms, people should speak to their GP. And to be honest, I thought to myself, this is becoming a bit of a joke, and I didn't. I thought about it, and then I thought back to the same lady I don't know at all, and I'm not having to go to Liz Canavan. She said previously, if you are visiting a public amenity, try not to stay too long at the site or have picnics. And Leo, which he's quite entitled to do, if that's what he wants to
the
do,
went down to the park. And,
the Taoiseach. He had his picnic, and my problem is that generally people all around the country are doing their best, and that's why the results are so good. And when I was asked to close my pub, I closed it, and when I was asked to stay within the radius, I stayed, and when I was asked to social distance, I social distance. My son is immune suppressed; he's a heart transplant, so all my family were really careful. And it seems as if all this stuff goes on, and then there's kind of another, I can't explain it, like another planet, where people can do stuff and it has no relevance. And I think that the march on Monday, and I don't have an opinion either way whether they should be marching or whatever, I'm not getting into that.
The Black Lives the photographs which have come to light, it wasn't, the organisers say it took off. They didn't expect insofar as there were named organisers, it got a much bigger crowd. Some say up to 5,000.
Yeah.
And the photograph on O'Connor Street, there was no social distance between people, let's be blunt.
Yeah. But my understanding was that the maximum was 4 people. You can't say to people around the country, listen, look, keep 2 metres apart and maximum 4 people. And then somebody decides that we're going to have a march. Because obviously there's going to be more than 4 people.
And there's another march, and I'll try and get the organisers for you as soon as I can clarify who it is. There's another march organised for this weekend, and according to one news source this morning, it's been organised by a number of political parties. We'll try and find out who they are. Now, but John, you are deciding you're going to break the regulations. You're going to break the recommendations. You're going to open early, even though you don't serve food. You're going to open, over a month earlier?
Well, you see, there's a slight difference to what I'm doing. Because I'm going to stay, even though I'm breaking the recommendation, I will apply the same rules in my pub as will apply to the pubs that are serving food and drink.
The social distancing.
Social distancing.
And what is the name of your pub?
Harney's Final Furlong. I'm just outside Clonmel in a place called, village called Ballycleran.
Okay, and John Harney, is it your final furlong if you don't open?
I'm probably lucky enough that I can survive it. But I think that it's just not making sense to me. And I think that putting billions into the economy, this we'll fix everything and we'll just throw another few billion in. But like, we're all going to have to pay this back. This isn't some gravy train we're on or somebody giving us a present.
There's no free money.
There's no free money and there's nobody...
Now, John, you had a heart attack, I'm told, 4 weeks ago.
I had, yeah.
What was that about?
I'm not sure, but I got a bell to the tick-tock, as we say down here.
And where were you when it happened?
I was at home.
And did you know what was happening to you?
I had a kind of an idea, yeah. I had a kind of an idea.
What, were you sitting in the chair having a cup of tea?
No, I was just waking up saying I'll go off now and I'll do a nice long walk, and then I got the belt.
Well, what does that mean? You got a pain in your chest or your arm?
Yeah, in my chest, yeah. Now, what it does, you see, is because of the impact of that and a bit of damage that was done, it puts me into the underlying condition, which Tony Hoolan speaks about. So it's very important in my pub for myself that things are run right.
So why are you reopening?
Because the
safest thing for you to do is to stay shut until the government, whether they can enforce it or not. You're saying they can't. You're saying they can't enforce it as a recommendation.
It's a recommendation, yeah.
But the best way for you to stay safe with your underlying condition is to stay closed.
No, it's not, Joe. You see, this is what the problem is. The best way for me to stay safe is to keep the 2 metre social distance. That's the best way. Because it either works or it doesn't. And if it works, like the Minister for Health tells us, if it's 2 metres, it's 99% certain that you're okay. So if that's the case, it doesn't matter who I meet or what I do. If I'm 2 metres away, I'm safe.
But how can you guarantee that, John, in a pub where people have a few beers and they get happy-clappy and they're seeing people they haven't seen in months and want to shake their hand or give them a hug or slag them or whatever you do?
I think there's a little bit of a red herring for the simple reason that if I open my pub, it's really important that the pub is run properly and people feel safe in it.
Mm.
So it's up to me, like, that applies any time I open my pub. If people are acting the clown and messing and breaking company, I will straighten it. And I will do that now. But we have to trust people. At the end of the day, we are going to have to leave the dogs out of the kennels. We're going to have to see, can they find their own way home? And that's what we're not doing. We're being treated like children. And I think there's a huge debate, should it be 2 metres or 1 metre? And I believe that if it was brought back to 1 metre, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to stand 1 metre apart instead of 2 metres. I would feel that most people would actually stay the 2 metres apart if they could, that's the way it will work.
And have you mentioned this to the Gardaí, that you're going to reopen early?
No, because, like, the local superintendent would be a man that I know and a man that I have great respect for. And there is a chance that he will be objecting to my licence in September. That is a possibility. But we have to, as publicans who sell beer only, we have to stand up. We're lying in the corner. There's nobody saying anything.
And you're saying the Gardaí, we needn't mention anyone in particular.
Yeah.
Well, the Gardaí are within their rights to object to the renewing of a licence at any time, for any reason.
They stand
before the judge, and the judge says A or nay.
Well, he can say that I'm not a fit and proper person to hold the licence. Now, he can say that because a recommendation was made and I didn't adhere to it.
Mm.
But the problem that I have is that you can come into my pub today, well, not today, on the 29th, and you can have 3 pints of Guinness.
Yeah.
The nicest Guinness in Ireland. And a fella can go into Clonmel where they're serving a burger, and he can have a burger and 7 pints of Guinness. And his 7 pints of Guinness are legal. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not legal to have 3 pints in my pub. Sure, I can't get my head around that at all.
Okay, you can have it. As Charlie Chalk, in fairness to him, he's opening at the end of the month, he said people can have a ham sandwich if they want, and with a bag of potato, and they can have pints too. And he made no bonds. But John Vaughan, 51551, wash your hands. John, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe. Sorry about this. I saw the march on Monday, and I was absolutely furious because what did we all go through for the last 3 months? I have multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the people who have to be extra careful because the treatment I have actually lowers my immunity. okay? So what exactly did we all go through where people have lost their jobs, people couldn't go to funerals, family funerals.
Mm-hmm.
There are people, like my wife went back to work last week, and there are guys she is working with who have 50 euros left in the bank.
Yeah.
And they're saying, it's pay the rent or feed my kids this week.
Good
right?
God, yeah.
And 5,000 people decide to virtue signal, and it was a virtue signal, to go out and 5,000, and that's fine. I actually agree there should be something done. I agree with them, but not now. Mm-hmm. If 5% of those people get sick, according to Dr. Holohan, who is unelected, he is going to insist that the restrictions be put back in. And this country cannot survive a second round of quarantine. It can't.
So what do you think of what John Harney is doing?
I can't blame him. I cannot blame him. If 5,000, if I have to walk every day. I actually have to walk because I have problems with my legs, and it's one of the ways to keep it under control because of the MS. And we could not go 2 kilometres outside for exercise, only 2 kilometres, and the nearest large town to us is Mallow, and that's over 5 kilometres away. We went there for shopping, mm-hmm. and we got stopped by the Gardaí a couple of times to ask, was this trip necessary? Now, I'll ask you a question. If you see 5,000 people breaking the law and getting away with it, are you going to listen to the government who then tell you you can't open your business and you can't have a life?
But you see, you can't. Okay, you're accused. And there have been other incidents as well in the public domain that have been well covered in the last month or so, where there was large groups of people, much more than 2 or 4. There were scenes at the High Court, I think, at 3 or 4 occasions. They were well publicised. Nothing seems to be done about that.
Nothing was done about that.
My question is, John, you're benchmarking yourself against what you're saying is law breaking.
I'm benchmarking myself on what I consider to be fair. And you cannot have 5,000 people being told, 5,000 people, we're going to do nothing about this. We're going to let this one go. But you can't open your pub again. You can't open your business again because you are endangering people by having maybe 3 or 4 people in the building to keep your entire family going.
Apparently, there's a Black Lives Matter protest planned in Cork, Dublin, and Galway this weekend.
If it was 2 months down the road, I'd be cheering them on, but not now. Not now. We are not out of this yet, and they are doing this, and you are left going, what's the point of any of the restrictions we all went through for 3 months right now? What's the point? It's like I said, and we're amongst them. A lot of people, they cannot afford to go into a second round of quarantine. They will be destroyed. You know?
Yeah.
Sorry to be grim about it, Joe.
Reality is reality as people perceive it. And by the way, 50 euro, as you say, people at your wife's job had 50 euro left in their account looking a choice between the mortgage or feeding their kids is a pretty grim reality.
Just the rent even.
John Harney, you say at the end of your text, I can't do this anymore.
What I mean is that I just get the feeling that everybody's sitting back and not everybody maybe, but a lot of business people are sitting back saying like, this has gone a little bit pear-shaped, but nobody's coming out, you know, and I know like a lot of publicans will sit back and wait and see what will happen in Ballyclara and to see will they open or not. But what I'm saying is that we have to take it on. And I will guarantee that if there's an outbreak in this area, my pub will be closed immediately.
Yeah, but it'll be too late then.
No, I'm saying that if there's an outbreak around the area,
there could be an outbreak now and people are asymptomatic. That's the problem with this virus.
We don't know, Joe. Like,
I know, exactly. We don't know. That's my point.
But how do you know?
I don't know. You don't know.
Okay, but in Tipperary, in the last few days, there was 5 extra cases. Mm. Now, Tipperary goes from Port Tumnel Bridge, which I'm sure you know, down to Clonmel, up to Newport, which is about 10, 12 miles from Limerick, and down to Carrick and Shore. So we don't know. That could be 4 people in a nursing home. It could be 4 people in a meat factory. It could be 1 person in Clonmel, 1 person in Turles. We don't know, and they won't tell us. So we all live in this little vacuum where they have all the information and they don't tell us anything. And, like, this won't be popular, but, like, Dublin is the Wuhan of Ireland. That's the position they're in. And there was a march there, and none of our top politicians came out and said anything. Hmm. And I think it's shameful.
I think there were some politicians on the march.
Yeah, well, what's all I know is that I have enough of that type of...
Well, I'm looking at footage filmed by Breed Smith, TD. They're not retweets, so I presume it's filmed by Breed. And she's loads of... On her Twitter account, I'm told, of the demonstration and the crowds. And now, I'm sure Breed observed social distance. But John, if... John Harney, if the Gardaí come to you and say, John, please do not reopen...
If the Gardaí come to me and ask me that, I think if the figures keep going down, if things are going well, I'll keep going. I think if the figures start to go back up, I won't. I'm not in the business of trying to upset the whole place. That's not my policy. But I think.
But if the figures keep going the way they are at the minute, the new cases,
I'll be open,
under 100 fatalities, tragically. But they're under 10 at the minute. You will reopen much earlier than other polls.
Yeah. And I think there's, like that man said, there's been funerals where 10 people are left into a church and 10 people are left into a cemetery. And we have seen where that's been broken in other cases. And then there's 5,000 on a march in Dublin. And it just doesn't add up. It's when you put everything together, the whole thing is a bit of a shambles now, and I think they did really well, but they've carried it too far. And just for me, I have enough of this nonsense.
Sorry for interrupting. People are near breaking point, Joe.
John, yeah.
They're financially, mentally, they're near breaking point. Like I said, I have to stay away from people as much as I can because of my condition. But I can see it. People are near breaking point, and you can't keep expecting people to turn around and take this for much longer. Okay. You're going to have problems. And if the protesters, if 5% of those protesters, just 5, get COVID-19, we have a massive blow up again of infections, and you will have Dr. Holohan saying, oh, shut the country down. Why is the second protest being allowed? Why can't it be virtual? Why can't they wait just 2 months?
Michael is a publican in County Wexford. Joe at RT.ie. Michael, what do you think of John Harney? He's reopening much earlier than the pathway, the roadmap indicates. What date again are you going to reopen, John? John Harney. Where's John? He's gone for a sec. Okay, I think it's the end of June. Michael, a publican in Wexford, what do you think of what John Harney is doing?
Well, I can see where John is coming from. We as publicans were the first to close any business in Ireland of our own accord. We're getting nothing from the government. We don't know where we stand. We're paying our sub to the vintners. They're doing nothing to help the publicans. I have no clue when we're allowed to open. You'll hear lads saying you can open with food. No one knows. Does a bag of crisps do, or do you have to have a main course meal, or what? No one knows.
But you have to socially distance. How many can you fit in your pub, inside and outside, with the 2 metres?
Well, I'd probably be able to 60 or 70.
Would you? Okay, so it would be worth your while, reopen.
Well, if it's a case that you have to put someone on the door, and you have to have someone on the toilets to sanitise the toilets and all this, I can't see it justifying payment, no.
So you're saying you won't reopen?
It doesn't justify... I will reopen, but we'll probably be reopening without making money because we'll be paying extra staff.
But is it better to be to reopen?
And of course it's better to reopen. Yeah. But as a publican, and any publican will tell you, we don't know what the laws are, where we stand.
Well, the roadmap is clear. The 29th of June restaurants and pub with food licences. Pubs themselves without a food licence, August the 10th, nearly 6 weeks later.
Yeah, but they haven't come out clear what the rules and regulations are.
And what guidance are you getting from your Vintners Federation?
Not as much as one letter we got from the Vintners.
Yeah.
Not as much as one letter. The vintners are the very same as what the IFA are with the farmers.
Yeah, okay.
As far as I can see.
Yeah, you're having to go with two organisations there in the one sentence, fair play to you, Michael. No, that's the bottom line. But Michael, the government, August the 4th is the deal, is the roadmap. But John Harney, John Vaughan, Michael Curran, they're all saying what did it for them was that march on Monday and the fact that so far there's no indication of any sanctions against the fact that 5,000 people marched, not arm in arm, but they were elbow to elbow, it looks like, from the photograph. I know photographs can be deceptive. Has the march made a difference to you? And all there've been other public gatherings which seem to get away scot-free up around the High Court on numerous occasions, which they were openly, and it's their right to do, they were openly challenging the Gardaí in one piece of coverage I witnessed.
Yeah, but there was nothing done to any of them people that done them marches. But it's still, if a publican opened tomorrow morning and he only has 10 in his pub, he can be done for it and he can lose his licence.
Yeah, when your licence, and when is your licence up for renewal?
Sure, it's the same as everyone's in September.
They're all up around September, okay. And Michael, what do you think of John Vaughan is saying that people, their voices can be heard, and we don't want to be accused of panicking, but John Vaughan is saying people are at their end of the tether. John Harney is saying, I can't do this anymore.
But sure, people are at the end of their tether, and even the ordinary people are just getting sick of the whole thing now. Like, how long can anyone go on with their business closed? How long more can it stop saying it without an income?
Michael Curran, stay there. Michael Curran, joe@rte.ie, 1850 715 815. Michael.
How are you, Joe?
Yeah. What do you think of John? John Harney said, I'm opening my pub, come hell or high water, at the end of this month, not in the 4th of August, as the government are allowing us, so to speak.
Well, Joe, to be honest with you, he has my full support. If John can open his pub in a safe manner, I don't think he's breaking any law, to be honest. I think the law that really was broke was last weekend. I think if you go back in time...
Are you referring to this demo?
Yeah. Because there wasn't the required distance between people there. We don't know what amount of people are going to contact COVID out of that. So I think it makes a mockery of the like of John.
What do you think?
People who are trying to run businesses in this country or try to get businesses back on their feet.
I understand that. But Michael Curran, what do you think? I'm using your second name to distinguish you from the other Michael. There's no disrespect intended. Michael Curran, what do you think the Gardaí should have done then? 5,000 people, how would you stop them?
I think including
these one TD.
First of all, there was no intent. I saw no intent to for the guards to either stop it or to make them comply with the social distancing. So that's a problem. Intent is not there. Mm-hmm. I think I haven't heard any politicians coming out condemning it.
Well, Simon, the Minister for Health did, in fairness.
Okay, that's one. Yeah. Okay, so where's our Taoiseach, Leo? Where is he on this? What's his point? How is he, and what is he looking at?
John Harney had a cut at the Taoiseach as well over that incident. Being photographed, and he quoted the Assistant General Secretary of the Department, Taoiseach Liz Canavan, who said before that, that particular Sunday, she said, if you're going out for exercise, don't hang around, go home, don't do picnics. There was obviously hanging around, which is bizarre, thinking in the world we live in, that we're talking about hanging around being a crime with your buddies. And that seemed to demoralise John Harney and then the demo and other events. And he's saying, thus far and no further, what's his phrase? I can't do this anymore.
But I think what comes first, Joe, I appreciate what's going on in America at the moment and what people want to do and demonstrate. But what comes first for this country? Is it our economy or is it our demonstration on a global basis? For me, it's the economy and it's people
it should be our health first.
And obviously, our health is tied in to the fact that demonstration wasn't good for our health. So
that man's health down in Tipperary, that John that's trying
John
to open
Harney,
that
John Harney, John
yeah.
Harney,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
John's health is based on his livelihood, and his livelihood is based on getting his business up and running. And I think he should be allowed to do that.
John, by the way, John Harney, before I take the break, your heart attack had nothing to do with the pressure you were under, did it?
No.
Okay,
well, I don't think so, John.
Okay, good man. Thanks. Fair play for saying that. We're propelled today by a call from John Harney, a publican in Ballyclerahan, beautiful Ballyclerahan in County Tipperary. And he said he's at the end of his tether, and he was particularly struck by the demonstration, the bank holiday Black Lives Matter demonstration in Dublin, attended by nearly 5,000 people. He's annoyed so far that it seems the authorities are not all that bothered about it, according to John, and he's upset about other incidents before the Taoiseach in the Phoenix Park when they were told not to have picnics. And he said, I can't do this anymore, and he's reopening his pub at the end of this month instead of, as the government roadmap stipulates, as August the 4th. He's aware if he reopens, the Gardaí might not be able to actually shut him down the next day, but they will and have the power to challenge his licence when it comes up for renewal in September. But the judge then decides, it's for the judge to decide about it, but he's still worried about that. Tim Cotter. Tim, good afternoon.
How are you? How are you doing?
Good, how are you? Your point about John Harney reopening.
Well, he has the point. First of all, we had dividends last week, the workers.
Yeah.
The guards came down and told them to move on, or the files sent to DPP.
But I think that situation has not changed. Because...
But even let it change.
No, I see.
Why was it done in the first place?
Yeah, but that could have
been. They were socialising, they were 2 metres apart.
No, I'm
they
looking
were
at. I've been given another tweet by Breed Smith TD, who was on the demonstration on Monday, and she has a photograph from 3 days ago. She said, I'm proud to stand with the Debenham strikers on Parnell Street today. Their strike is essential. So there she is, and there's no Gardaí in sight. And there's it's the same type of demo that they originally had, where it's obvious the Gardaí did ask them to move along, even though half a mile up the road there was a big protest outside and inside the High Court, and the Gardaí didn't ask them to move along. So that was definitely a mismatch there. But as I say, Breed Smith is there, and the Debenham workers are still on strike as such, because of what the company did and pulling out overnight and leaving them high and dry. So I'm saying, is that evidence that the Gardaí have changed their position?
I think that they'll change the position on a small crowd, that they will not challenge 5,000 people, because they know if they decide to enforce the law, you'd have a right straight away. People wouldn't listen. Tensions were high.
Yeah.
And they probably read the situation. Look, if we intervene here, it's all hell will break loose. We don't want that. But at the same time, the Debenham workers, as I say, were bothering no one. And
I think most people would agree with you there. But Tim, what do you think of what John Harney's doing?
Well, I suppose his back is to the wall. What's he supposed to do? Mm. I mean, at the end of the day, we have a health doctor that had the whole country closed down. He's not elected. And at the end of the day,
it's the government that makes the decisions.
But
it's the CMO who makes the and there's a whole slew of experts
who make the
recommendations.
Yeah, but if anything goes wrong, who will the finger point back to? It's not going to point back to Leo. He'll say, I just did what I was told to do. So this guy is running the country. Leo is doing what he's told to do, and all the rest of them.
If I can just come back in there.
John Harney, mm-hmm.
Yeah, just, you see, I suppose just to try and keep it to the point that I'm on, like, the problem that I see it is that they've picked the pubs. So they've become, like, this industry specific. And how appropriate the venue is isn't accounted for at all. And I have an issue with that. Like, if I can work within the guidelines of a restaurant who can serve drink, I should be allowed to sell drink as well, with the same guidance. So there's no difference. And anybody to suggest that, like, I think is unfair.
Well, what's the difference, John? We say you walk into a supermarket and go up to the deli counter and pick up whatever off the deli counter, and you walk into that license and buy a bottle of wine.
I think you either have your set up for what's mm-hmm. required at the moment, or you haven't. And if you haven't, don't open. But if you can work within the guidelines and do the two-metre social distancing or whatever is required, well, then you should be allowed to open. And I think we have to get to that point. And
you see,
like, the other thing, Joe, that I think is a little bit missed is that mm-hmm. when people, there was a big debate went on, should it be 2 metres, should it be 1 metre, and a lot of restaurants or pubs or whatever said, well, if it's 2 metres, it wouldn't be worth my while opening. And I think myself, like, that you were on the prime time with Billy...
Oh, Claire Bourne, in the pub, yeah, in
McCoy's. Like, the four of you went in at singles, do you know what I mean? And, like, that's not really... In my pub, husbands and wives come in.
Yeah, I know, but husbands and wives have to sit 2 metres apart.
I wouldn't think so. Mm. I'm sure if they can sleep together, they can drink together, Joe, I don't know.
No, I don't think the 2 metre rule requires a couple at all.
Okay. There's a pub in, we'll check that out. There's a pub in Knocktofer in beautiful Kilkenny. Eamon, good afternoon. Eamon Irish. What's your pub called? Irish's Bar.
Good one. Irish's Bar in Knocktofer, very original.
Okay. Eamon Irish owns a pub called Irish's Bar. Did it take you long to come up with that name, Eamon? For your pub. Okay, sorry. What do you think of John Harney? John Harney is reopening at the end of this month his pub, come hell or high water, because he's fed up with other people breaking the regulations, being all over the news and nothing being done about it.
John is 100% right, Joe. And I feel I could open my local. During the week, you might have 8 or 9 in a country there, no problem. That's what you'd have. And there'd be no problem social distancing. I can see the problem with the big bears, like in mm-hmm. Temple Bear or Big Bear, that 100 people are no good to them on the weekend and security and all that. But small country pubs could be open.
And what's your proposal, Eamon?
I'm not going to break the law, but I'm just saying I could be open. Even if they don't let people open even from 7 until 10 at night, country mm-hmm. bear, just give everyone 3 points and people would meet and go home and just do it on a trial basis, see how it works.
And to come back to John Harney's point, I can't do this anymore, and I think it was John Vaughan saying people are at the end of their tether. What are you hearing, Eamon?
It's the very same. And you can't compare, with, say, not in country pubs with Dublin pubs. The population is there. And even I go back to the match. If you put 5,000 people in Croke Park last Sunday at a match, there'd be uproar.
And Croke
Park, there would have been uproar. And the whole thing is kind of crazy. But the only thing I'd say, Joe, is pubs have no beer at the moment. I have no beer anyway. Diageo and Heineken took back all their cakes because they were all out of date.
And Guinness and Heineken, are they brewing?
I don't know, Joe. I don't know. But all the beer and all the pubs was taken back there.
So Irish's Bar in Knocktofer is a pub with no beer?
That's it, yeah. Okay. At the moment, anyway, Joe.
Okay, Greg, good afternoon. 51551, wash your hands. Greg, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. You're a medical doctor, I gather.
I am, yeah. So I have kind of two interests in this particular argument because I'm a cardiologist up here in Dublin. But at the same time, I actually own a pub outside of Gorey in Wexford as well. So I can kind of see both sides of the argument. Now, what I would say is that I'm shocked at what I'm hearing in the sense that whilst I'm very proud to be Irish and I'm very proud to see a lot of the good work that we've done, particularly the charitable good work, but only in Ireland would we be having this conversation. You know, let's be honest, only in Ireland would we be
having it. They're having it in the UK as well. I heard it on Radio 4
but not to this
early
extent,
this morning.
Joe, they're talking about restaurants, I get that, but I mean pubs and local pubs and stuff like that. First of all, what I'd say is the march that happened up in Dublin, I was actually at the march. Well, I was walking through, I wasn't part of the march. I condemned the march 100%.
And what did you see, Greg?
I mean, it was mainly young people. It was they were obviously uneducated as to, you know, the seriousness of what's going on. I see a lot of young people going around that aren't taking up the social and physical distancing. They were social distancing to a degree, but not to what we would expect. So first of all, let me just put that out there. I see two sides of the argument. I condemn the marches. I also condemn people that are, you know, out on the pubs, street drinking. Any pubs that are open at the moment, I condemn that completely. We shouldn't be doing that.
There's no pubs open, is there?
Well, the pubs, when I say open, there's pubs that are serving drink outside of the pub, so they serve them out as takeaways, and then people can sit out in kind of like the car parks and stuff like that and have a pint. Completely condemn that. And the reason why I condemn that is, first of all, we're in a disaster at the moment that I'm at the forefront of. That has never hit any other generation in the history of mankind, arguably, right? And we're still in the coal face of that. And it's going to take us another couple of months to get out of there. Now, I know people are isolated and it's tough. And I find it myself as well. I live alone. And again, I know what it's like for a lot of people out there. People are struggling, mental health issues as well. I also act as a counsellor for mental health. So I get the frustration is out there. Now, what I would say to John is that, look, John, two or three wrongs don't make a right. So just because, you know, there is issues out there like marches that are going on that shouldn't, other pubs that are out there that are half open, half not, you know, that shouldn't, it doesn't, in my opinion, give you the right to go ahead and say, oh, well, do you know what?
Do you believe that the two meter distancing presents a safe situation?
In what context? On a plane,
in the sense
in
of,
pub,
if you go into a shop, or if you go into a butcher's, and if the person beside you is 2 meters away, that you're safe.
No.
You don't.
I don't. What if that person sneezes?
So, like, well, I'm just asking because that's what they're recommending. You know, so you're on a different wavelength to what they're talking about. They're saying that people should be 2 metres away. And what's all I'm saying is, I can open my pub and work within the same guidelines as will be given to a restaurant or a restaurant bar. So I should be left open. If I can't do that, then I shouldn't open. But if I can provide the same service and the same safety as a restaurant bar, well, then I should be allowed open.
So I totally understand where you're coming from, John. So what I would say is, first of all, when you're opening a pub, it's very, like, I've seen the comparison of a supermarket made by the other gentleman that was on the call there as well. There's a world of difference between opening up social distancing in a supermarket where people are sober than where people are in a pub or a restaurant situation. I don't believe that restaurants should be able to serve drink. I think they should be able to serve takeaway food. Now, you're saying that you can maintain 2 metre distance and stuff like that, which I feel, it's only my personal opinion, the guidelines are there for 2 metres. I don't think it's enough. Now, when people get a few drinks into them, John, that's where the situation changes. And even if it's a local pub, it's all well and good saying, 2 metres, fine, and everything, when everybody only has a couple of drinks or they're relatively sober. But when people start to get a couple of drinks, and a typical example of that, John, a typical example of that is this street bingo that you see. People start off with the best intentions. They're in their gardens. They're on the street. It's great crack. Fair play to them. And it's a lovely spirit that's around it. But look at the pictures and look at the videos that we don't see where people aren't social distancing after they've had.
Apparently, upstairs, as we say here, are telling me that they've been monitoring a Black Lives Matter Twitter account. And very hard to verify anything these days. But they said that one of the recent tweets in the last few minutes is, following recent correspondence with a Garda Síochána, we've elected to cancel the protest on the 8th of June outside the US Embassy. Now, if Black Lives Matter say that's not us, well, let us know. But apparently, that as far as we can ascertain at this stage, that is them. So the demo has been cancelled. So is that an admission that Monday was a mistake?
Is that a question for me or John?
Yes, Greg, you, Dr. Greg.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. And I, like I said at the very start, I do see two sides. So I completely understand where John and the rest of your callers are coming from. I know that people are frustrated out there. I did condemn the march and that type of behaviour that's going on at the moment. And look, I know it's tough for people as well, but we have to kind of stick together. We have to stick with it. It's extremely dangerous what people are doing in opening up, even gradually, you know, businesses and pubs and bars. And that march was an absolute disgrace. Lucky enough there was no trouble at it, like that. But it shouldn't have happened.
But people are saying, like, the whole John Waters and Gemma O'Doherty, that whole debacle, in terms of, forget about what went on inside the court, but the demonstrations and the gatherings and the speeches, I think one session went on in the round hall for an hour and a half with John Waters and Gemma O'Doherty making speeches to, I said it was 150 people. Then last week, was it John Waters and Gemma O'Doherty turned up near where I live in Dollymount and had a I don't know if many people took any notice, but they set up a stand and a megaphone and they start giving speeches. There was at least 20 people in their entourage, so that wasn't social. So people are saying, hang on a minute, this has been chipped away at and there doesn't seem to be any action.
Yeah, but look, Joe, look at who you're mentioning. You know what I mean?
I don't want to get into that. Greg, what's a cardiologist doing owning a pub?
Well, it's an old family business that I took over and stuff like that.
What's
but
the pub
closed? Completely closed, yeah.
What's the pub closed? What's the pub? Do you want to tell us the name of the pub? No.
No, I won't. I won't, just in case. I don't want John going down there with a couple of bricks and smashing up the pub.
I wouldn't.
For a couple of bites.
He wouldn't. Not at all. Okay.
Yeah, it's just outside of Gorey. But look, I do see both sides of the argument.
Yeah,
I do see both sides of the argument in the sense I see how John is frustrated. And look, John, I'd be the exact same as well. I've got stopped at multiple checkpoints and... it is tough, you know. I know it is tough. But if we just stick in there for a couple of more months, we'll get there.
Yeah, but Greg, a lot of people are saying, you heard John Vaughan early, people 50 quid left in their bank accounts and mortgage and kids and summer and it's...
Yeah.
Anyway...
But Joe, can I come back in there just for a second?
Yes, John Harney, finally,
Well, that man is saying, like, if we just hang in there for another couple of months, the government have said that bar restaurants can open at the end of June, but bars can't. That's the issue. You know... We either open or we don't open, but don't just pick out the pubs and say, well, no, some fella might fall around the place and go over, because, like, at the bank holiday weekend, I spoke to a taxi driver in Clonmel, and he told me that they're really busy bringing people around to houses, to parties, barbecues and all that. Mm. They've no issue with that. But, like, this is going to happen anyway. This type of social thing is... It's not that people are all sitting down having one can and 2 metres away or whatever. It's going on around the country. Last weekend, when the sun was out, I'm sure it was the off-licence did really well. And what's all I'm saying is, give me an opportunity to open my business and I will run it to the best of my ability. And if I find, I will give a guarantee that if I find that I am putting anybody's health at risk...
Yeah, but you won't. You're not a medic, John. And you're not a psychic. You're not a psychic. You can't...
The problem
with this virus is that for a significant period, 2 or 3 days, some people are saying more, some less, it is asymptomatic. You don't know. You could have it now. I could have it now.
That's fine. And you could have it inside in the super value. And you could have it inside in the butchers. We have to come out of the trenches, and we can only take the best steps we can.
Okay. John, you mind yourself. And Greg, Greg is a cardiologist, sure. Publican. John Harney is a publican that had a cardiac attack.
Shouldn't laugh.
I know.
I could see the correlation.
You could see the cardio correlation. Okay, John Harney, stay safe. Greg, stay safe. Eamon Irish, stay safe.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And joe@rt.ie. Jesse Ojuka. Jesse, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
You were at the demonstration on Monday.
I was indeed. It was amazing.
And what do you think of the criticism, including from a doctor who saw it, that said it wasn't proper social distancing, especially at this current scenario, the pandemic?
Well, the protest was initially... organised as a social distancing protest. I myself didn't expect the turnout to be so numerous. When people asked me, because I went on my lunch break, my manager asked me how many people I thought would attend, and I said maybe 100, 200 max. So I think everyone was astounded with the turnout. I do understand the concern, definitely, but we need to also ask ourselves who is asking that, because there have been gatherings that have been happening. People have been getting complacent towards the pandemic anyway, because the weather has been getting better and people are kind of getting fed up being in their houses. I know there hasn't been any gathering like the protest, but who is asking those questions and what kind of places they're coming from? And I do understand their concern, but this is something that needed to happen now. It could be the reason why it was so numerous again was because of the pandemic.
Why did it need... And of course, everyone understands the horror of what happened and what's been happening to black lives in America, especially at the hands of the police. But, Jesse, why did it need to happen now? The American embassy was closed for a start. It was a bank holiday.
It wasn't. And I think I actually went... when RTE posted a picture on Instagram that day, I responded because they focus on the George Floyd incident, because we all know that happens in America, but Irish people have not addressed racism in this country. People are too complicit here towards the different types of racism Black Irish people experience. And we're never given the opportunity because it's always overshadowed with, oh...
Okay, well, here's your opportunity now, Jesse. Go, seriously, go ahead and detail. Have you experienced it?
Of course. I experience it to this day. I've experienced it. One of the reasons my voice is being heard now, 10 years ago, people came into my house and vandalized my house, writing derogatory racist terms in my house. Last week, walking down the street, people would come up to me and say racist things to me. In work, customers, I work in retail, customers would say racist things to me. So it happens, and I've desensitized myself to it because the opportunity for conversation is never there. I understand, George, the incidents that happened in America is what inspired the protest, but the racism that happens in Ireland is what fueled a lot of Black people to attend, and is what's making people speak up now. And I'm happy happy the opportunity has finally come, and the landscape for conversation is finally here, because it's something that I've been living in Ireland for almost 16 years. I've never seen Ireland being so receptive and ready to talk about this issue that's happening in this country.
And have you been on previous protests before or demonstrations? They're highlighting racism, which should never be labelled as a protest. But Jesse, have you been on other demonstrations before as big as the one on Monday?
I've never seen any.
And you're saying one of the reasons that it was so big on Monday at such short notice was the fact that Irish people who are Black or whatever have experienced racism over the years, and it was the straw that broke the camel's back in many ways.
Exactly. Because even now, people are replying to the protest. Like you said, I don't want to call it a protest. It's a march for awareness. People are replying, saying, why are we walking? Our walk is not going to change anything happening overseas. That's not the only focus of the walk. It's to raise awareness towards things that happen here. Ireland needs to adopt a zero tolerance approach towards racism.
Okay, so stay with us, Jesse. And Jesse, I'm sorry, some of those things you describe happening to you and your family are horrific. Were any of these people ever prosecuted or ever caught?
No.
They broke into your house?
They climbed over my fence, yes. We had a fence in my house. They climbed over my fence because people would walk through my garden and use it as a shortcut. So when we put up a fence, I think they kind of decided, they acted like we were antagonizing them, and then they decided to just vandalize the house. So spray painted the walls, spray painted the doors, writing ridiculous things, F-U, N-word on the walls. And it got to this, I've been so desensitized to it that I actually, I kid you not, I forgot that happened to me until this whole movement came, because I became so desensitized that that's a memory that I just completely disregarded.
Okay, stay with us, Jesse. Timmy, good afternoon.
Hey, Joe, thanks for having me on the show.
Again, thanks for participating. Timmy, do you agree with Jesse? I don't know whether you're on the demonstration on Monday, but do you agree with Jesse that it's thus far and no further, that things have got so bad that a lot of young Irish people like yourselves are saying, no, we're going to stand up against racism once and for all?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to bring it back too far to the previous call, but I think, the previous segment, but I really want to talk to what happened in the previous segment, because I think a lot of the conversation on that call was, they condemn the march, but they can understand both sides of being a cardiologist and owning a bar at the same time. And this is exactly the issue. Like, I was not the march personally, but the people who are in my sphere, in my friends groups who were at the march, were so anxious about going because they were worried about the pandemic. The pandemic is something that we all inherently understand. You know, social distancing has been part of our lives for months now. I've been living at home with my partner and our son for months now. So I'd love to be outside. I'd love to be going and doing whatever I want. It's been the best summer of all time, in my opinion. However,
this is such a critical issue. We keep getting told this isn't the right time. This isn't the right time. It's never the right time. And they're perfectly happy to condemn a march when, I'll just say a few names, may not mean anything to anyone, but Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Tamir Rice, these are people getting killed by law enforcement. Killed by law enforcement. And the fact that people in the middle of a pandemic can feel that level of disgust, anger, shame, togetherness, solidarity, to come together to protest. And like Jesse said, he doesn't want to call it a protest, but however, we want to get our voices heard. And for that to be condemned shows that they've missed the point entirely. They've missed the point totally, because the thing about racism is it's systemic. Okay, so we don't all feel racism because we're not all victims. And until we understand and empathize with people who do feel racism on a daily, weekly, yearly basis, it will never go anywhere. And it will always be there.
Timmy, you say in your communication, I grew up wishing I was white.
So this is something that I think a lot of people, it doesn't get told, right? Okay. I've had a lot of calls over this weekend where people are like, look, I don't understand, but please talk to me so I can get at least something about how you feel, you know, about this whole situation. And my point to them is, I bet you've never wished you were something else. Okay, you've never wished, in the whether fleeting or for a long term, if I was white, I would be perfect. I would be rich. I would be fine. I would have a normal life. Bearing in mind, that's my perceived notion of what it must be like to be a white person to a young black person or a young person of color. And if you've never had to think that way, then you definitely don't understand what it's like to be on this side of the picture. And that is something that's so damaging to young people, and it affects us then as we're older. And I think it's something that just needs to be put out there as a fact, but also as something to just be aware of.
And Timmy, you mentioned as well you have a 3-year-old son, I think, and there was an incident in Dublin recently, well, October.
Yeah, he was four last week, so he'd be very mad now if you told him he was three.
Good stuff.
But yeah, I mean, look, I've spoken about this publicly a number of times. I think I've been on the receiving end on so many racist incidents. And I think, as Jesse said there, you do get desensitized after a while because you see it as a part of life. It's one of those troughs that you work through. But when I had my child and all I ever wanted to do was protect him, bear in mind he's of mixed dual heritage.
Okay.
So my partner is Irish. I'm of Nigerian descent. So he's a mixed child, which says to me that in the future, at some point, he is going to be on the receiving end of some kind of racism, whether it's microaggression or full-on, you know, full-blown racist attack. So me bringing him to school, and for someone who's cycling a bike on the other side of the street, busy intersection, to come over to our side to shout at us and him specifically in his face, in my child's face, to go home, to get the F out of this country, and then the N word, you know, and then cycle off like a coward, was just one of the worst incidents I've ever had, because I'm well able, if someone said that to me, to take it. Not to take it, but I've come to desensitize these things. But this is a 3.5-year-old child to take that. How are you supposed to feel? What is the end goal with things like this happening, you know, around us? And for me, the worst part about it wasn't that he said that, but actually that everybody around just didn't do anything. They didn't say anything. They just looked away, or, you know, sheepishly. And that is the worst part about racism for me personally, because what happens is you just get so isolated. You just feel so alone. Like, and there's nothing like that feeling, because it just says to you, everybody around you agrees. They're all complicit in the act. So
insofar as you had to, hopefully you didn't, that the child didn't fully understand. But what did you have to say to your then 3-year-old when that awful person shouted at you?
Yeah, I mean, luckily he didn't register the full weight of what was said, right, as a three-year-old. Yeah. But he's a very perceptive child, and all he said to me was, well, what did the naughty man say?
Yeah.
And so I'm able to kind of, like, contextualize it in a way, maybe that he doesn't understand, but that he kind of is able to move past it. But I was there for his first racist experience, which is not something that people generally think about, you know, or should think about at all. Like, I shouldn't be worried that, oh, it's going to be tomorrow, it's going to be tomorrow, it's going to be tomorrow. But it's happened now. And, you know, it was just a horrendous experience because I had no control and it wasn't going to sit at me.
Angie, good afternoon.
Hiya. Good afternoon.
Okay, again, this point made, raised by Jesse, who was at the demonstration on Monday, but he said one of the things that strikes him is that it was, in one sense, the number of people there, which was a significant number, very short notice, reflected racism in Ireland and people saying thus far and no further. What's your own experience, Angie?
I feel like growing up in Ireland, it was quite an experience, to say the least, when it came to racism. Me and my family were subjected to all kinds of abuse that we've moved around three times to the point where we just left and moved to the UK. We initially lived in Blanchardstown in around 2006, and we were the only black family on the street. And we were young, so we weren't really sure what was going on at the time. We didn't know that these were racially motivated attacks. But we would have eggs thrown at our house regularly, thrown at the cars. We just get abused daily. And even at school, as a young child, going to school and hoping that it's a safe place for you to play, you know, communicate with other people, you just don't really realize that they don't really like you. It was just a thing where white people just didn't like black people when we was in school.
And when you say your house was attacked, Angie, were the Gardaí alerted? Did anyone?
Yeah. So it was a thing where we were attacked on two separate occasions in two different houses. So we lived in Blanchardstown and our house was egged. We lived in Maynooth in Kildare and we were robbed. But both occasions, the Gardaí were informed. However, nothing was ever followed up. And it was just kind of like one of the callers said, it was kind of just left to kind of hooligans just doing some crazy things. And it was never followed up. Nothing ever was, nobody was justified. And like justice was never brought. So it was pretty much nothing was done really for us.
And Angie, were you on the demonstration on Monday?
I do not live in Ireland anymore. I live in the UK, so I wasn't there. But I did see on social media like the huge turnout. And I am really, really glad that it's kind of, it's sad that it's taken this long for people to kind of realise and come together and kind of say enough is enough. It's really sad that it's taken this long. But
so so Angie, you would hold with Jesse's point, and that is that it wasn't just about George Floyd on Monday. It was also an outpouring of hurt and upset by Irish people of colour as well.
Yeah, I would say this is coming from years and years and years of oppression. This isn't something that just, like, George Floyd was, I guess, like you said earlier, the straw on the camel's back, that like that broke the camel's back, that instigated this huge rally of people. I feel like, you know, Irish people of colour especially would understand that, you know, things had to change. And obviously now it's not as, well, since I don't live in Ireland anymore, I'm not sure, but it's not as blatantly obvious when people are racist to you as much as it was before, like when I was younger. It was really, really open. It wasn't as covert as it would be now. People would physically spew abuse to you on the road while you're walking with your family for no good reason, tell you to go back to your country. So it's coming from years and years and years of abuse, and I feel like now, even though it's taken so long, it is something that had to have happened regardless.
Okay, so say there, Angie. Tony McKernan is in the United States. He's in Boston, 28 years, originally from Northern Ireland. Tony, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Good.
Thanks for taking a call.
Thanks for making the call. Tell us about what's happening, or what's your take on what's happening in the USA at the moment.
I'm actually in Dorchester, which is part of Boston, Joe, Massachusetts. And I heard, I was listening to your show there yesterday, and at the end of your show there, I heard Joe Gillespie on, or Frank Gillespie. Sorry, I wouldn't be far from him. Actually, one of my windows was put in last night with looters, Joe. But The reason I was calling was actually yesterday I called you when I was listening to that lady from Texas you had on your show there.
Yeah.
And you had another American lady, I think she was from Minnesota that lives in Ireland now. And the unfortunate loss of George Floyd, this has been boiling for quite some time. And obviously you can feel it on the streets. And it's brought it to a head. And unlike things past there, like when I got to the States first, I lived in California. And I arrived in 92, and we had the Rodney King riots in L.A., and it sort of fizzled out. But I can't see this one fizzling out, because the division here, Joe, is just... since Trump got into office, it's been boiling for quite some time, you know?
You say you can't see it fizzling out, Tony?
No, when I say fizzling out, normally these things last a week, 2 weeks. As time goes by, time's a healer. And Boston is fairly liberal in its views, et cetera, Joe. And they've been demonstrating here now. We had downtown Boston on Sunday night. There was quite a bit of damage done there. And the older folk were saying they don't remember anything like that since the bus riots in the early 70s, where the buses refused to take, they had to segregate the kids prior to that. And then obviously black kids were allowed to travel with white, etc.
And is there a curfew in Boston?
There has been a curfew in Boston, Joe, for the coronavirus from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. That has been in effect.
Okay.
But there is now also a second curfew now because of the rioting.
And how is that enforced, Tony?
Actually, I was watching local TV last night, Joe, and a lot of police, both state and local police, and there would have been probably 400 or 500 in an area of Brockton, which would be about 24, 25 miles south of the city, predominantly mixed race. And there was very little confrontation. They had a line put up probably 70, 80 feet, and the protesters came forward. The police kept backing them back. And eventually, after a long time, probably 2.5, 3 hours, they moved them maybe 4 or 5 blocks away from the police station, you know.
Yeah.
But it has to be said, it's the genuine protesters, Joe, that's gone off very peaceful. There's an area here in Dorchester, Franklin Park, and they had a vigil last night, and it went very peaceful. People lay down on the street for 8 minutes, 46 seconds, and actually when you're sitting watching it and everything's quiet, it's a long time. And obviously that's where the police officer had his knee on the... and George Floyd's neck for that length of time.
And what do you think?
And they got up and walked away.
What do you think of the reaction and the actions, or indeed inactions, of the American president?
Politics shouldn't come into it at this stage, Joe. It's unity that's needed. And like there, when he came out, I've lost track of time. I think it was 3 or 4 days ago when he was given out to the states that had Democratic governors and mayors, etc., etc. You know, he's bringing politics into it. There's a time for politics. Obviously,
partisan politics.
Exactly, party politics. And the people are looking for unity. And like, you know, when Joe Biden came out, when George Floyd passed away, you can call it political, you know, trying to get votes or whatever, but no sign of Trump for a couple of days, you know, and then down to the bunker, and then, you know, up to the church, then up to St. John's Church in D.C., that's causing a lot of backlash here, Joe.
Seems to be the actual
bishop, Marion, I think her name's last name is Buddy, come out and condoned him straight away, you know.
Condemned him,
at home, Joe, no cop on.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And from anywhere in the world, Joe at RT.ie. Ian is in New York. He's from Navan, living in the States. He's a retired police officer, 22 years. Ian, good afternoon. Your point, please.
Hey, Joe, how you doing? I don't really have a point, really. I was just anticipating a question from you.
Okay, well, what do you think of what happened?
I think there's a lot of mayhem on the streets over here in New York, and it's pretty widespread. I'm just hoping it moves to positive change in society over here, but it's not guaranteed that things are going to change because, I mean, the laws are still the laws on the books.
And as a police officer, Ian, and I don't know if people would know now, you're retired, you're a police officer, but what is the attitude, insofar as you can generalise, towards police officers in the States, from especially black people who feel, with lots of examples, that they've been badly done by?
course, I mean, there's lots of tension between the police and the black communities over here in the States, and it's not something that's just recent. It's ongoing for like a long time.
And what do you think? The kneeling on the neck, surely that's not normal, is it, in police procedure?
Well, of course. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a police officer anywhere who would come to the defense of that officer in Minneapolis. I mean, that was totally out of line, unprofessional, and it was very callous in what he did. I don't know what he was thinking, but as I said, you know, most police officers in the United States, the millions of encounters every day that go by without incident.
Yeah, of course.
Most police officers do a commendable job, day in, day out.
And what do you think?
Ian,
what do you think of what Tony McKernan is saying about Donald Trump and the divisions he's causing?
Well, obviously, you know, I mean, Donald Trump seems to be a divider and not a uniter, and I guess we need a uniter during these times. As I said, I guess American society is divided in general, and he's just acting upon that.
And Tony's point that he doesn't see this fizzling out soon.
Well, it's quite a possibility. I mean, there's a perfect storm of stuff going on here in the United States. There's there's the COVID. But the police are dealing with a lot. They're dealing with COVID. They're dealing with these riots.
There's a lot of pressure. Yeah.
And they're on the defensive now in regards to, just protecting themselves.
Kevin Tobin is in Maryland. Kevin, I know you worked as a jockey when you first went out. Is there a lot of racism in the States, Kevin, from your experience?
There is, Joe. Listen, thanks for having me on. Look, there is. It's not as in plain sight as what you might have seen in films like Mississippi Burning back in the day or anything like that. It's much more subtle. It's more systemic that I would come across. And it's also a kind of a casual, passive nature for what's acceptable and what's not. That would be my opinion on it, anyway, Joe.
And Tony's point that he doesn't see this fizzling out as it fizzled out before, such as the divide in the States. What do you think of that observation, Kevin?
I definitely agree with that, with Tony there, Joe, there seems to be a different feel about this time around. I'm not sure if it's the graphic nature of the video that came out. I'm not sure if it is a combination of the COVID. And I agree with Tony that there's a time for politics and there's a time for not, but the man in charge has validated a lot of bigotry and a lot of unhelpful opinion throughout the country. I mean, let's not forget Donald Trump is a symptom of 60-odd million people voting for him. Once you remove Donald Trump, those 60 million people still exist. Yeah. Those people that tolerate his behaviour, tolerate his lies, his dishonesty, and all that, they still exist. Okay. And they're obviously willing to give up their morals for the economic gain or whatever it is they see as an appeal of him, you know?
Okay. I have to leave the thanks indeed, especially our American calls have made such an effort. Timmy, all our other calls, 51551, wash your hands, that continues. joe@rt.ie continues. Maeve Moon is the BCO, Pat O'Carney on sound research by Richie Byrne, Angus McInally produced.